Welcome to Under Construction. I'm Donnacho Callan. Later in our Suppliers Corner, we will be hearing from Kevin Lunny of Mannock. One of our country's greatest attributes is its ability to think of others, a compassion that can only come from being through tough times. Looking out for each other is a foundation rock in Irish DNA. Today's guests are known for their love of their incredible jobs, but today we are celebrating their selfless side with their amazing effort for the Tranquility House project. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Donnacho.
Yes. Thank you. We are delighted to be here.
Well, lads, I'm not going to avoid the difficult questions. We're going to get straight to it. Julian, I'm going to come to you straight away first.
I'm here.
Who would you rather see on Dancing with the Stars, myself or himself?
Oh, listen, it's a no-brainer yourself.
No way. I think the nation wants and needs to see it.
Well, no, you see, the gig is to have Donnacho and Dermot. Double D dancing together. Or let's go for 3D. Dermot, Donnacho and dancing.
Oh, right.
It's a three-way.
Would you like to do it, then?
No, I don't think.
Now,
I,
be honest.
Can I be really honest?
Open up.
Yeah, I did a dance lesson for our wedding.
Okay.
It was typical Celtic Tiger. We paid €60 and we danced for about, well, we plodded around a ballroom for about 50 minutes. And
was
afterwards, it didn't even get that far, unfortunately.
Oh, you don't even know what you did.
The song was The Calling.
The Calling?
Yeah.
What was your calling to dance?
No, it wasn't. And that's what we turned out after 50 minutes. She gave me the €60 back. She was there. I can't take that money. You're absolutely full. She grabbed Jenny and said, change the song and get your sisters on that dance floor as quickly as you possibly can. She didn't go that far. But Jenny knew what she meant.
Yeah, but she didn't just give you enough time.
Because
I believe everybody can dance, Donnacho.
Yeah.
But okay, I did a charity one for
The Late Late.
You
one night, it was before dancing was a thing, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I had to do Bollywood.
Bollywood, I remember. Yeah. I saw you. You were large and in charge.
No, but you know what it is? Like, I don't know anybody who doesn't love to dance, right? It's a totally different thing when you have to do 1, 2, 3, 4. When you have to remember a sequence of moves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's when it becomes 100% not fun.
You got to freestyle it. You just let it go, yeah. Dermot. Switch on the music. Yeah. Up the vibe.
But does that get easier, right? I'm asking this question. Does that get easier the longer you're doing it? The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do you start to just remember that? Because I just found that.
No chance.
It was like doing a Rubik's Cube. Like doing a Rubik's Cube.
Listen, it all comes to you. You just listen to the music, feel the beat, and let it go.
But your arm ends up in the wrong place.
Well, now that's wherever you're putting your arm.
Yeah, exactly. That could end up in a lot of trouble. In fact, do you know what? Let's two of us stay away from it.
No, listen, if I was teaching you, your arm would go into the right place. Yes, that's all I can say. Yeah. Thank you very much. Drop the mic. Okay.
Right, on to silicone. Yeah.
Julian, how are you? You're looking great. You're looking fit, healthy, well. How are things?
God bless you. Thank you so much. Yes, I'm feeling fit, fresh, and fabulous.
Yeah, brilliant.
No, all good. In fairness, yeah, things have been good, thank God. As I say, we always, it can be up and down and challenging, but right now I'm in a great space. I'm feeling great and I'm so focused on this project. So this is what gives me energy and strength, which is a lot of thing. You know, I think I always say you have to have focus in life and that keeps you going, right? We all have to find that something, that nirvana.
Yeah.
And for me, having a goal and a vision, so with the times I'm feeling challenged or I might be on top point, I go, look, there's something there. See the light, feel the light, don't dream it, be it, and stay fresh, fit and healthy. Because I'm all about the positive mindset.
You are.
That's what keeps me going.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, I mean, I haven't got this far in life without it, you know. Yeah. When you climb mountains, you have to have focus.
But with you, Julian, it's not put on. You know what I mean? It's not like I've been around people in rugby and rugby circles and you try to keep a positive mindset, but it slips. It never slips with you. You are always a ray of hope.
Well, I try to be, Donnacho. Listen, you know, I am who I am. Yeah. I'm me. You meet Judy. And like, I think people, until they get to see me and meet me, I've always been the same. But one thing I've learned, guys, from very, very young, and people ask me the question, but Julian, how come you have lived so well, you've done so well with your CF and you've danced professionally, you've hit all those goals, you've ended up in top of your game. I said to people, it's my mindset from early age. I programmed my mind to be fit and focused And I kept the positive mental attitude and had an amazing mum. And I think support networks is everything. Mm-hmm. It's a really important thing. So I had a wonderful support network. But when I was young, as I said once before, I didn't even realize till I was in my teenage years that there was anything actually wrong with me. Mm. I felt like anybody else. Honest to God, I just took my tablets, did my clearance, did my fitness, did all that. But that was just part of life. But that's the thing you've got to remember, you know. There's
kids,
you know,
your age at the same time wouldn't have been doing as much as you. So do you think that did you stand out from other kids with CF at the time? And I'm not saying the mindset, the kind of putting all that I can do whatever I want to do. Could you see that? Can you see a difference between yourself and other CF sufferers because of your mindset?
Absolutely, Dermot. And I'm glad you even brought that question up because. Yes. But I didn't realise that until the latter years because people would say to me, Julian, my God. For instance, I would be in the hospital years ago and say, Vincent, there was six people in a room. Now, that today would never happen. Bugs everywhere. But I would be hanging off the back of the bed with the weights, pumping the iron, music going. And then I would be up and I would be very much okay out the back stairs, running up and down, getting the head fresh because the endorphins with the training keeps the brain going, keeps you fresh, keeps you focused. And then, you know what? I would always look for the positive, but I was very driven. And I think you've defined in life, what is it that drives you? You know, even when I was sick in hospital in a bed, I was focused. Okay, I got to get it back out because I want to dance. I want to do a TV show. There's a commercial coming down the line. I want to go for that. I want to get a degree. Like it was unheard of in the 70s for someone like me to become a professional dancer. Unheard of. You know, it was like I was there dancing with the best of them with a lung condition. It just didn't happen. But I worked really hard. I trained really hard and I got out there and I went for my dreams. And that's what it's about. It's about focusing on your dream, your passion and never giving up. Mm. So one thing I can say to anyone, no matter how tough or challenging life gets, you have to hold on to your dreams. Never give up. Even in the darkest hour, when the light goes down, there will always be another light at the end of the tunnel. Someone there to pull you back, to bring you up, to raise you up. Believe in your own faith. Believe in who you are, because we are all different and unique. And each and every one of us, like the three of us here together, we're like the three musketeers. But we have greatness, right? Together, we have all achieved in our own areas.
Yeah.
Well, Tonica, rugby superstar. Architect of the world.
Three musketeers.
Musketeers.
I was hoping he was going to be D'Artagnan.
No,
that's all gone now.
Well, listen, but we're here, we're large in charge. You know, but the main thing, as I say, is look, you've got to stay focused and you've got to believe and focus on the big vision. And my big vision has been to create this home, which we're going to talk about, for CF families. And that's why, having watched all through the years when I was in hospital, I saw families crying. I saw people lying on floors, sitting on chairs, sleeping there. And I watched in those six-bedded rooms, people to the left and right of me pass away. And sometimes those people never had anybody with them. You know, I see people would cry with me and go, my family member can't be with us because they live maybe in Donegal or somewhere. And you know what? When you're young, these things stay with you. I would have been 15 at the time, maybe 16. But I said, if I ever get a chance or get a platform in life or become successful, I am going to do something to change this.
Yeah.
Because we all got to do things in life to try and help others.
100%.
So anyway, on that note, I will stop.
Yeah, no, but Julian, you know, I love it for it, that type of mindset. But if I'm honest, I don't always share it in terms of, like, are you a bit the same? I can be tough on myself. I can.
Well, I was going to ask you this. Like, kids play rugby, right? Mm-hmm. And they all believe that they will play for Ireland one day. But is it the mindset that actually gets you there? Because did you always, like, fascinated to hear Julian, because did you always believe, or was it by accident?
It was complete accident.
Did you end up on the wrong bus?
Julian was hugely talented. I was 6'6" playing a game that no one wanted to play. Okay. No, thankfully, we're really good at it. I'll be honest, if I was starting out, no, I wouldn't get a game. You know what I mean? But,
are you being hard on yourself?
Of course. But
those jocks should definitely get a game.
I'm thankful of it. But Dermot, the question for
the
you.
The mindset.
Yeah, Dad, how do you stay on top of it? Can you get dragged down a little
Absolutely.
Bit?
Absolutely. And like what I do is very stressful because it's quite complex. It's building people's homes. It's building, building in itself is complex. And there's lots of moving parts and all that. And you do go to bed at night and you think, why am I doing this? This is you go to bed with the worries of the world. I can get bogged down in that, but I try and then enjoy the good bits of it, you know, and like it's funny because on the TV show, people just see the good bits. They just see, even when it's stressful, it's entertaining. Whereas I'm actually, it can be pretty horrific. Like, there's times on camera, and all three of you have made TV programs, right? Mm. So you all know that, and even here we're in the studio, there's three cameras on us, right? When you're making TV, there's only one camera. So if you are going through a stressful situation, something has happened and you have to explain it to somebody, what happens next? We'll do that again. And then so I have to recount it all again, and it gets really, and the audience at home love it, but like it is difficult. But and then people just see at the end of it the result and all of that, and so it is a roller coaster. It's up and down, and I try and place myself somewhere. I'm getting better at it, but I'm not, like, I do as a person get very stressed, and I do as a person kind of take it all on board, but I'm trying to kind of put myself, so when things are really good and ratings are great and all that, I try and say, yes, it's great. And when things are really bad, it's not that bad. Just to put yourself somewhere in the middle.
Do you find with that though that people feel, because you're in our living room so much and
four times a year, that's all.
You're a bit more German than that.
Like way more, but you feel like we all know you.
Yeah.
Sometimes does that happen where people maybe cross it a little bit and you just being around your family, your friends.
They find it hard. I've been doing it for so long, I don't feel anybody's crossed the line, because everybody who comes up to me is actually very nice and very, like, the conversations I've had have been, like, I've had people come telling me what I thought, like, oh, geez, I knew exactly what you were thinking there. And I said, really? And I said, I don't even remember.
Of course.
But my family find that difficult, the familiarity. And it's an unusual thing that people are very, very familiar with me. I'll walk into a shop and, Dermot. They don't even try and chat to me. It's just like the neighbours walked in.
Know the way they say, when people see you, Dermot, they know Dermot from the telly, right? Yeah. We all know Dermot from the telly. As you say, Dermot, you're in our living room. So we all think we know you really, really well. But can I ask a question here, if you don't mind?
Yeah, keep going.
Oh, God, okay.
No.
Would like to know.
Yeah.
Who is Dermot Bannon?
No, no. Can we swap these out for stiffer drinks?
Bye now.
No, seriously.
But I am what you see. I am kind of that person. That's a very.
But I think you've answered it, because I don't think you could fake what you
couldn't.
Do.
No, you couldn't fake it for that long. And I remember the first time I was faced with being real on camera. I had spotted something wrong on site. And all I kept thinking, how am I going to fix this? How am I going to fix this? I told nobody.
Yeah.
And I said, oh God, okay. It was a window and it was down in Enniskerry. And I remember the day, and I said, oh my God, that's completely wrong and it's my fault. And by lunchtime, I'd figured out how I was going to fix it. And I said to the producer who said, we were all gone out for lunch, and I said, oh, like, that was really messed up this morning. And they all looked at me and said, why didn't you tell us? And I was there, I was wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't you tell us? They said, can we go back and reshoot that? And can you just tell us how you felt? And I it was the most awkward conversation I've ever had, because I had to say, I did this, it was wrong. I think I can make it right by doing this, this and this. I'm not 100% sure. And they just said to me, can you trust us that we'll mind you and we'll tell the full story? So we'll have it. We'll have the problem. We don't know how, if this can be fixed, but let's talk about it and trust. And from that moment on, I trusted them.
Yeah.
I trusted them that nobody's going to shaft me, that they were going to tell the story.
Yeah.
And if I could solve something, and if it wasn't, what are you going to do? Because you're going to have to do something anyway.
Course,
you know,
yeah.
And that opened a chasm into how I thought as a person. Everybody in every profession makes decisions. Not everything runs like clockwork. And letting the camera see that, and letting the camera see that this is a bit of, but it's a real struggle. Mm. And it's a struggle because somebody else has done something wrong, but I've also done something wrong.
I feel Irish people rally to that a little bit, don't they? They love, like, I notice it in sport.
Yeah.
Irish people have no problem with you making a mistake.
No.
It's the endeavour. It's the
absolutely
giving it your all.
Yeah, exactly. You got to go all in.
Yeah, and they don't like smugness, and they like the underdog, and they like seeing somebody who has kind of gone through something or something has happened and has won out from it. That's
but
how
you
I
see,
feel.
What I was looking for there, now, Dermot, that was beautiful.
Oh, you were looking for tears. You
that was a soliloquy. No, I was just asking. Really, was what makes you tick?
Yeah, I'm still obsessed with buildings. I'm still obsessed with design. When we go away on holidays, I traipse around cities. Yeah. I bring people to see buildings. I love nothing better than going to a foreign city on my own and spending the whole day wandering around looking at buildings. All my phone is taken of little clever ideas for benches that pulled out of windows. But like, that's what I do.
Yeah,
that's what I love to. My Instagram, I'd say most people I follow on Instagram, I'd say 90% of them are architects, other architects. Like, it's funny, like people like Norman Foster, Richard Rod, like these are, they have Instagram pages. This for me, as like if I was a kid, is like, it's like Ronaldo, you know?
yeah, of course.
And most people have never heard of them. And I remember, I can tell this story because hopefully she doesn't listen, because she listens. But one of my big heroes in college was this guy called Richard Rogers. So he did the Pompidou Centre in Paris. He did Lloyd's Bank in London. He was a really famous kind of futuristic art. Anyway, during lockdown, his wife runs the River Cafe in London, right? Ruth Rogers, and she would have trained up Jamie Oliver and all that.
Okay.
But I decided when I went to London, I was going to the River Cafe for my lunch
because
I got their cookbook over, and it was more to do with the aesthetic because the cookbook had photographs from inside the restaurant, which was designed by Richard Rogers. It's all very
there's
strange.
A difference in two of us. All I see is the chicken. You see the building.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was there, and I wanted
the
to go.
On the side.
I wanted to go to lunch there just to be in the building because it's down. It's a really cool building with these really strong primary colours. Like they had a very strong aesthetic. I don't get starstruck very often. And I remember I was walking into the restaurant on my own, and Ruth Rogers walked out, and I nearly fell over. I was that starstruck.
Yeah.
And most of it's because you are married to Richard Rogers. And I spent a half an hour thinking, will I ask her for a selfie or won't?
No,
I didn't. I was too nervous.
Terrible.
That's my life. Making incredible homes. Like that's a grueling TV show, right? Because we go to a country, you've normally got jet lag. You're up at 6 o'clock in the morning because you have to be at the house at 8 o'clock. You're absolutely wrecked, right? And at night time, you arrive back in the hotel at 9 o'clock. You get your dinner at nine. You need to wind down, so you don't go to bed. It is. But when I get to that house, as soon as I go in through the front door, I'm electric. Yeah. I'm alive. The tiredness goes, the adrenaline kicks in, and I'm there. Oh my God, look at this! And the rest of them are all throwing their eyes up to heaven because they're like the cameramen and sound men are absolutely exhausted. Did you see the shadow gap? And they're
look, let's go to sleep.
I say fuck off, this. Would you fuck off with your shadow gap?
Drive on.
But they're all there, like, because I'm obsessed with this. And I said, oh my God, have you seen how they've placed those two materials together? Yep. That's amazing. So that is me. That's me. Yeah. That's my life. And I'm incredibly privileged to do it every day.
In that you found your lane, isn't it?
And I've got three kids who haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see them now. I knew my lane from about the age of eight with Lego and all of that. And because of that, I do see so many people who don't find their lane until much later in life or whatever, or never find a lane and are just happy to go on the motorway. Mm. I do realise that is a gift to have that and to know it and to want to do it. But like again, like you, like I persevered. Like I wasn't the hardest worker in school. I wasn't the to get architecture. It's the equivalent now of 600 points.
Yeah,
okay, back then. But I really wanted to. I didn't give up. I went to England. I studied over there, and because there was only two schools of architecture in the country at the time.
Wow.
And there was like 4,000 people used to apply.
Wow.
And there was, I think, about 120 places.
You found a way.
You find a way.
But you always find a way.
You always find a way. If you keep that stuck in your head.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. And it wasn't easy for my parents, because I see now for them, how difficult it was, because my daughter is the same age. She's actually older now than I was when I left. Okay. And I left home and they were heartbroken, but I was doing what I loved.
Yeah.
And I never noticed, because I was so excited to do it and to be there and to be in college with like-minded people. Because like I not struggled during school, but I wasn't the sporty type.
For a lot of kids,
if you play on a team or if it's something that binds you.
Yeah, there's a community about it.
And most kids will play some kind of sport.
Yeah.
Most. When you're not sporty and you're not that interested in it, to find your tribe is a lot harder in school. And I always struggled in school because of that. I always struggled to find my tribe. When I got to college and I used to sit in a bar with everybody who's just like me.
Yeah.
Oh, that was, it was amazing.
I think that's getting better now though, isn't it? Because before, maybe, like I'm just coming back, we're in around the same age. There was that mentality of you can
You're
only
far
be...
younger than
me. Yeah, 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 we should. No,
you
I
got
just
that
look
fresh
at,
skin.
I look at,
he's not, Julian, he's not.
No,
too many grey hairs.
Now listen, hello.
The hair has died and the tan is fake.
Excuse me now, you leave his tan
It's not
alone.
A tell-all.
You're looking fresh and fabulous, Dermot, not your box.
When does it turn into a roast.
This is turning into a beauty roast.
Yeah. Can we chat, lads, about you coming together though? Because it's incredible. And Julian, I'll go to you about the Tranquility House and how important it is, and maybe tell us a bit about it.
Yes, well, look, Tranquility House is part of the Julian Benson Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. It's been in the works for many, many years, don't it? As I was saying earlier in the podcast, this came about in necessity. Because basically for many years, you know, the people in the hospital didn't have a place to stay. There was never a home in Ireland for cystic fibrosis families, somewhere for where their families could stay. Because so many people were travelling to Dublin. Because St. Vincent's Hospital is the national referral centre in Ireland for cystic fibrosis. So many families and many CF warriors, as we call us, have to travel up to Dublin. And some people do round trip journeys. So I always said to my mom, who was... The reason I'm probably so well today and I've been so successful is because of my amazing mother, because of the amazing gift of strength and encouragement she gave me. And we had many wonderful, wonderful conversations. And Mum said, Julian, look how well you're doing. Look how much you've achieved. And maybe it's time to show people, you know, and encourage people. I said, Mom, don't you worry. If I ever get a platform... And if I ever get successful in my life, I am going to do something to change the life for CF families. So I promised her. And 6 years ago, she passed away. And then I said, you know what? Now is the time. I had started on Dancing with the Stars. I got the biggest platform ever. And I had two choices. I either had to go and just live the showbiz, live the glamour, and just go there, do telly, and leave. Or I was then going to go there and do something real, use that platform. So hence I set up the foundation and I said, right, we're going to find a house and we're going to make it warm and a loving home, a home away from home to see our families. And that's what we're trying to do. And hence I said, well, who better to bring in to this project? I said, there's only one man. I've got to go get him.
Yeah.
So I said, right. I said, we got in touch with Dermot and I said, look, Dermot, here's what I'm trying to do. This is what I need to create, but I need the dream team. I need to put the best of the best together to deliver this house. And this is where we are with Tranquility House. Dermot came on board and we've put a brilliant team together around us that are helping make this work, including, I have to say, Chadwicks have been phenomenal coming on board. The love we've had from companies that have just embraced what we're trying to do, because this is a project will be there long after us. This home is going to be there for many, many families for many, many years to come. And it'll be owned by the foundation. It'll be owned by the CF families. So it can never be taken away.
It does lead to a bit of pressure for you though, doesn't it? When it's more than just a home, it's a legacy. It's so important to the home away from home. Like, what was the spec you got?
I didn't realise any of that.
You just got a spec.
The first time I met Julian with that, like I got it. I got why he wants to do it. I was presented with this building. And the building is like, it's an amazing, it's a beautiful building. It's a, but it needs a lot of love and care and attention.
Yes. Can you tell us more about the building?
So it's an old period house, right? So it's not a simple bungalow. It's not a semi-D. It's got beautiful cornicing. It's got beautiful rooms. It's divided up. The reason Julian bought it is because it was already divided up into units. So it suited it suited the need, right?
Exactly. And so it's a pre-63.
It's a pre-63.
Property,
so that's the kind of the technicalities behind it. But with that, it is old. The nightmare in that is preserving it and conserving it and doing all the rooms justice. But the win out of all of that is those rooms are going to be very special, right? And just from listening to Julian in the early days, like what's really important that this house has got to be a hug for them. So if you've had a really difficult day and you've been in the hospital and you're watching loved ones and you're sitting like hours upon hours and people, you know, kids with CF can be in for a month, two months.
Oh yeah, the average day is 3 to 4 weeks and sometimes months on end and in a single room on your own. That's what people don't realise. That's isolation.
Yeah, can you tell us more about that? Just maybe take us through what is CF and...
Yeah, in essence, CF is an inherited genetic disease which affects the lungs, the pancreatic system, and many other organs. But mainly, it builds up mucus in your lungs, which continuously causes chest infections. So imagine, to describe to you guys, you know when you get a chest infection, right, and you feel really bad and you're coughing and your mucus, imagine having that permanently.
Yeah.
That's what CF is like. So you have you could be a permanent chest infection. Most people are on medications up to 50 tablets a day. And that's an average. Yeah, 50 tablets a day. You go through your regimes in the morning. You have to do your mucus clearance. Then you do your aerosol. You take your Ventolins. Then you do your clearance again. Then you take your other regimes. And many people with cystic fibrosis also have diabetes, CF-related diabetes. Like I have CF, I have CF-related diabetes. I have kidney disease, I have blood pressure disease, I have many other things. But that's okay. But you know what? It is a multi-organal disease, but you can manage it. But that's why many people, when you go into hospital, you have to have numerous antibiotics because each person with cystic fibrosis is different. So the bugs, everyone has different bugs in their system. So they have to be treated with very high-tech regimen antibiotics. And when you're in, the hard part is when you get hospitalized, you're in a room on your own. And you have to stay away from others with CF. So it can be very lonely. It can be very isolating. So having your family member or a friend being able to visit you and stay with you by your side when you're sick is everything. And this is what we're trying to do. And Dermot is trying to create this home away from home. The home with a hug is
you need to create a space that's recognisable, identifiable, warm, cosy, because nobody knows what kind of a day you've had.
Yeah.
And you need to go back to a building that doesn't feel cold. That it's not just function.
No.
The building, and that person will be by themselves as well. You know, or you might have... And it's also, for sometimes like siblings don't get to see other siblings, their brother or sister, for maybe a couple of months. So it's better to have somewhere for them to come down and stay overnight and then go in and visit brother or sister.
Yeah.
That's really important. So the building has got a lot to, and that's not, you can't just drag in a team of builders. We've sash windows in it. We've got beautiful old cornicing. We've got to insulate it. We've got to make it warm. And that's much harder to do in an older building. And that's the building work in it, because the house is actually big enough as it is. So we don't need to create a huge amount of space. It's divided up. So a lot of things are really good about it. But it's bringing it back. It's insulating. It's making it warm. It's putting in nice kitchens, nice space that people, when they come home from a really long day, they're in somewhere nice.
Yeah.
And that it's...
Yeah.
And
they feel like they're at home.
Because...
That's important.
And they can walk in there without having a huge amount of people around them and feel looked after. And that's what it's, that's what this, to create a, if we can make a building that will do it. You know the way you can go into some soulless places?
Of course.
You know, like anybody who's travelled, and both of you have travelled, stay in hotels. Some of them feel really functional and you just feel, I just want to be out of here.
Yeah.
And others will just, and they're the ones that generally feel more like home, will wrap you up and you'll think, this, I just feel, this is nice, a bit of respite for me for a couple of hours to stay in this room. And that's what I'm trying to create, is that the rooms will give you the respite, that the light quality will be really nice, that the furnishings, the room itself will feel warm, that when you're going into it, it'll feel as homely and as nice as possible, as opposed to just functional.
Yeah.
Because people, if you ask them, they'll just say, I just need a bed.
Of course.
They'll never ask you for, I'd love somewhere really nice.
No, exactly.
They won't feel that way.
They won't.
So it's up to us to give it to them and say, okay, this is for you. Mm. This is for
we
tonight.
We want to give them the best.
Yeah, this is just, we know what you're going through. It's not easy. And this is for you. Just sit down there and relax. You know, it's that feeling. Do you remember you were out on a cold, wet night and you were going to visit somebody and you're lashed on as well. And somebody comes in and the house is warm and you get a bowl of soup and they say, and you know the way somebody sits down there.
Exactly.
You're grand and I'll get you something nice to eat. You want that feeling. Everybody knows what that feeling is when you've arrived at somebody's house and you're bet and somebody just looks after you and you get into a bed and the sheets are warm or there's a clean towel there, there's a shower. Just that feeling, if we can encapsulate that in the building, that when somebody arrives, they feel just looked after. And it goes beyond function.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beyond function. Dermot's right. It is about caring for people and loving the family members, because sometimes family members are the unsung heroes, Donica. They're forgotten sometimes. They really are. Sometimes when people are sick, because all the attention goes to the loved one.
Yeah.
But we need to look after the families. So we're going to wrap our arms around the family members. And also what people don't realise as well, this house will also be for people. Some people go through lung transplants and other kidney transplants at very, very serious times. And we need to be able to provide a place for those family members, you know, to look after them as well. So this is going to be for everybody, hence our location.
Yeah, and the process, like we were talking there, it kind of goes back to the initial thing, the belief, right? When I saw the house originally and I saw the scale of it, I'm used to seeing that.
Yeah, of course.
But what I'm starting to tot up, this, how much this is going to cost, right?
Oh, don't even get me started. Yeah. All right, here we go. Don't even get me started. How much is this going to cost? You're going to have to watch the show, folks.
Okay.
No, but can I tell you?
They always fall out with him over budget.
No, but this is...
Don't roll your eyes.
No, I'm not rolling anything.
I was
moved. That's all I'm going to say.
Sorry to interrupt you, Dermot. But I suppose, look, what the process of how this is going to happen has been, because when I saw the enormity of what had needed to be done, I saw the enormity of the costs, right?
Okay.
And look, you run a charity event, you raise 30 grand. That's a lot of money, right?
It is.
But it's not. It's a drop in the ocean when you're dealing with a big building like this that you need to try. I just said, we'll never do this. If we're going to have to try and raise the money.
Yeah, but I said, we would do this. And I said, we're going to go out to the nation and the people will help us.
Yeah, no, and I believed you.
Because I'm very passionate about this, Sonica. I was hearing numbers. We were talking telephone numbers and I was going... But Dermot, I know you're going to do it because I know you're going to make it happen.
I knew the tact then, right?
Yeah,
when the telephone number started to be talked about, if we were to get in a builder tomorrow and do all of this, it's going to cost this amount of money, right? We have to completely shift our focus. This has got to go on to a different track, right? It's going into it. And we have got to gather as much help as we possibly can. Not money-wise, but labour and products and materials and help. So if we can get somebody to lend 3 days, doing repointing of the building, if we can get somebody to lend 3 days, somebody else to lend 3 days, we'll have it done, right? So, and that's how the project, we broke it down into small chunks and got people on board.
Isn't that a beautiful thing to give as well, though? Like, of course, all of us would like to give money, but some can't. But if I hold more value on it. If someone can give their time and their expertise, a bit like what you're both doing there.
That's it. It's time and people money. Giving
but
us.
What's been amazing so far, because we had a trades day a couple of weeks ago.
It was
where
amazing,
we met.
Amazing.
And it's one thing kind of on paper, having a list of suppliers and you're kind of, when you quantify, but seeing all those people in the flesh, right? And seeing their faces and
incredible.
Seeing the whites of their eyes and seeing them wanting to be there and delight and say, I'll do whatever I can. Honestly, that shifts it totally again. Like, I was very emotional that day.
Incredible.
A name of
a
company on an Excel sheet is great. But to actually see somebody coming up to you and say, I want to do as much as I can, it lifted it, the project, to another
It's because it's for something that we all care about, isn't it, Julian? Like, everyone has been affected. What's the, is it 1 in 19 carry the gene?
Exactly.
So we all know someone.
Yeah, we have the greatest cases of cystic fibrosis in the world in Ireland. People don't realise that. Wow. We are a lot, and it's just growing and growing. So there's a massive need for this house. You know, there are massive need for more, but this is not going to be the flagship.
Could I ask, after your chat, did you kind of think maybe that house wasn't the place for it? Should you have looked somewhere else without doing a retrofit? Should you have looked at building somewhere purpose-built for what you needed?
No, do you know what? Well, personally, I knew when we found the house, that was the house. It was the house for many reasons. For the location, for it was already in four units. I could see the vision because I know in my head, I could see the vision. I knew it made sense to me. It made sense if we got help.
Yeah, okay.
As we said, people help. We weren't spending money. We're a charity.
Yeah.
I'm very conscious of every penny we get is from the public and we don't spend money lightly. But I knew if I told our story and we went out there, Dermot and myself, which we did, and we've been on the journey to tell the story so companies and people would come on board. And, you know, slowly but surely this has happened and we had our trades day. So I always believed, because the house is in the perfect location for the hospitals, also for the amenities, and it is a great solid home. And we'd never get four units together like that.
And the costs would have been the same. If you were to build a house of that comparable size, you'd spend the same amount of money.
Okay.
So I did think, I'm different to Julian. I did think, would it be better on a greenfield site? Would it be better located, starting from scratch? I did think that. But I suppose Julian bought it. He knew what he wanted for where he needed to be located, where it was going to be the easiest to get access to the greatest number of hospitals to be and just as well, like, you could build it out on a greenfield site, but like, these are families who could be, they could be there for a month, you need shops,
you need facilities
around you. It needs to be in an established community. They need to be able to go out and, like, we're going to have kitchenettes that they'll be coming in maybe and cooking their dinner in the evening there.
Dermot, do you think that's something we could do as a nation a little bit better? Look at what we have in terms of retrofitting or finding different ways or using buildings in different ways to probably what we did before. Like, we all know we're in a housing crisis, but is the answer probably under our nose in ways too? Not being disrespectful, but I know we need to build, but is there projects like this that we could be better at?
Oh, absolutely. Like, especially in Ireland, we have a little bit of kind of, try out the old, we started, like, if you look at in our history, right?
Yeah.
People lived in towns and villages. And then the big thing was to move a little bit outside the town. So anybody who grew up in rural Ireland, like, the big thing was maybe to move out a bit and buy a bungalow, on its own bit of land.
Yeah.
And then maybe our aspirations got bigger, more land, bigger house, all of that. And I think we have this little bit of a thing, like, if the housing stock or if houses become a bit unusable or need a lot of work, we tend to just build new, and I think we've done that in this country where we've gone further out and we're building way out into the suburbs and we're edging our way out. And actually there's some great buildings and there's some really fantastic spaces in the city. Like, and you know, it does upset me a little bit when I drive around Dublin and you see
derelict buildings
and I think
they could be converted to good homes.
Like, you go to Paris or somewhere like that, and the city centre in Paris is amazing.
Thriving.
And also, but life there is good because people live in the city.
You go to
Barcelona.
Yeah, like, same.
There's very few derelict buildings in the middle of Barcelona. They pride their streets and their house. We don't as much. Mm-hmm. People just think, oh, we'll just let that go. And we'll build new. We'll go out to a retail park. We'll do that. And I think if we took care of what we already have, if we looked after what we would have a much more vibrant city. We'd have a much more aesthetically pleasing city. We'd have nicer spaces because it'd be life there, And then if you've got life there, you get shops. You get shops, you get coffee shops. And then you get a buzz.
Yeah.
And I think we've let a lot of areas of the city fall into dereliction. And the easy thing to do is to build new and build further away. But we've already, it's kind of like we're throwing it out and it doesn't matter. And it does matter if we don't mind our cities.
Yeah.
Other European cities, it often astounds me how gorgeous they are to walk around.
Yeah.
You know, like Dublin, sometimes like 20 minutes of a walk and then you're into dereliction. And I think it's a bit of a shame.
They should put the money into the derelict properties in Dublin and around the country. They're magnificent homes, like what we found. They should put the money in. It's simple.
But just on that, is it a different cost? Talk to us about money, the work involved in doing up a retrofit.
Of course it is. You're in a city, so getting deliveries, you know, putting up hoarding where there's a footpath outside and there's no front guard. It's much easier to build in a brown field site or in a greenfield site. But like if you think about it, a beautiful old Georgian building that's out onto the street, you've got no access to it. Getting materials in and out of it, building it, protecting it, putting work. Also, there's things that people see as a waste of money. Repairing all the brickwork, putting back in the old windows, conserving it. People will see that, it's a lot cheaper to do it a different way. And there are parts of Dublin that are amazing, like Merrion Square, right? You walk around Merrion Square, it's really powerful. It's a beautiful part of the city. There's no standout building there. They're all exactly the same. And if you said to somebody, I'm going to build a whole street and every building and every window and every door is going to be exactly the same, people say, that's really boring.
It's like a monopoly board.
Yeah, but it's incredibly powerful when it's all together.
Yeah,
you know, true.
And we have some beautiful Georgian streets in older parts of the city that if they were repaired and brought back into everyday use would be beautiful streets to walk down.
If someone was looking to do that, if someone's thinking retrofit is right for me, what are the steps? What would you suggest? Where do you get involved? Where does the QS get involved?
The basics. So I suppose, it's really to establish all the things that need to be repaired. Okay, so you've to break it down into small chunks of what needs to be repaired and then see what grants are available. So there's grants for this conservation grants, like there's SEAI have got retrofit grants for bringing it up, insulating it and all that. So it's finding out your schedule of works, what you need to do and getting. So you'll need an architect or an engineer or somebody to come on board and do all that for you and then putting costs against it, then finding out your grants and then just going for it. And it's incredibly rewarding. And the amount of people who've done up older properties and who sit there and think, do you see the old handles? You know, sometimes a little dent in a handle in your, because I grew up in the suburbs of Dublin. I grew up in Malahide, right? Okay. I grew up in a brand new house, but every house I've owned has been an old house.
Yeah.
I moved into the city when myself and my wife, our first house was, we bought in Drumcondra and it was an old 1920s house. But there was always these little eccentricities, like the dent in the door handle or the thing.
I was like,
how did that happen? There's a patina here. There's the scraping away. And it's lovely to be a custodian of a house for a certain period of time and wonder, who sat here?
Yeah,
before?
Exactly. Who lived
did
here
they look
before?
Into, and, yeah. and to know that fireplace has been lit for 100 years before me, before we were over there. Yeah. I think and we all love that. We all love the storytelling and just being in something that is before your time, way before your time, and a little bit of history. And that's the beauty of living in Dublin, in the city. Like, there's lots of old houses that have a history there. And I think the amount of people who get so much joy out of that, and they found old bottles when they're digging up the garden, or they say, have you seen this bit of newspaper? Or when we pulled back the liner that was on, we found this gorgeous old tiled floor. And they're so proud of that. And they'll go to the ends of the earth
to bring it back and
to protect it. And you go to their house and it's like, I'm so glad, like I spent all weekend like cleaning that. I remember in our first house, like we did all the work ourselves. We'd no money. We spent all our money on buying the house and we'd 7 grand to do up the whole thing, and we spent 3 on the windows and 3 on the electrics, and everything else we did ourselves. And I always remember there's a stairs in it.
You would be taking them to task on the budget.
Exactly.
How was it mushroomed into this?
I was looking.
Remember your 3 grand windows and your figure. Now it's 4.
How you made it go for yourself?
I was lucky enough when we bought our second house to be able to afford to pay people to do the work the second time. But I always remember the first time. The memories are unbelievable. Like we did everything in that house ourselves. I remember there was one weekend, and I still call it my John F. Kennedy stairs, right? And the reason
Oh,
you're going to eat your words now in a minute. You're going to be so upset.
Sorry, Julian, I'm leaving you high and dry. You're on your own on this.
I started sanding.
Step away from the vehicle.
I sanded every bit of that stairs myself with a tiny little electric sander because you couldn't go at it with big ones. And when I started on the bottom step, John F. Kennedy Jr. went missing. Do you remember in the airplane?
Yeah.
And when I got to the top of the stairs, he'd been buried. No way. But that was on the news all weekend. Did they find him? But I remember like that stairs, and I remember the story, and everybody says, you know, do you remember John F. I do remember him. I remember
I was
it was
stairs.
On the radio. Yeah. It's all the memories of the renovations. You know, and we were so proud of it.
Julian, your role within the project, is it holding him to task, or what's your role within this? Obviously, like you mentioned, that it's so close to your heart. But obviously the role that you need to take part to make it happen.
Yeah, listen, you've got to oversee everything, you know. Like, we're running a charity. Now, I have to say, I have an amazing CEO, Louise Dugan, and then Brandon Duarte. The two of them are like
the group,
some fantastic people who've really pulled this together with Dermot. Yeah. You know, my job is to oversee everything, to manage it, and to manage expectations. And when it comes to the finances, I have to be very careful across the charity, you know, because everybody's donated every penny. And on this project in particular, it's about the people of Ireland are helping us build this. It's that this is a people project. It's something that everybody has helped in any way, given their time or their services or their materials, like Chadwick's, for instance. They are all helping us do this. But I've got to keep a handle on everything, and I have to be real about it. Like, as well, part of our house is our amazing garden, and we have a wonderful gardener who's come on board. And he's just phenomenal. Like, he's created this major piece of magic for us, you know. And Dermot had been working with him, and, you know, we're getting the love, but it's important for me to make sure that we deliver the project.
I think your role in all this, though, because, like, if you start off on any project, right, you've got a project team, and you've got people who own it, or people who invest, or clients, whatever. Because of the nature of this, we're constantly getting people saying, I'd like to help out. Yeah. So that project team is getting bigger and bigger and bigger as people get involved. And what Julian does is he keeps this, he's the reason why. So he tells the story. And every time you sit down with Julian, there's not one person would not want to help.
Of course.
So once you explain the why, people are really happy to get on board. But he has to keep explaining the why. And every day, it's important. And he does it really, really well.
Well, thank you. Because the why is real. It's a real reason, real tangible reason. And I have to explain the why, because people need to understand why they're getting involved. And also they know that it's real. Like, I'm living, breathing, you know, living, thriving with cystic fibrosis. But we're doing at the same time. So I'm trying to say, people, look, this is what you can do when you bring people together and get the team on board. And as Dermot said, I have an amazing team of people. This is a no iron team.
Yeah.
I'm just a small part of this. It's all the, you know, I bow to the experts like Dermot and the team and Patricia and Louise and Brandon and all the companies and all those in their area who know what they're doing. I know what it's got to be. Yeah. I know what we need and what we want. And when we get down to the nitty gritty part, like, we haven't got in yet to our interiors part, which I look forward to doing that with Dermot. What the colourways, what it's going to, you know, the floors, the kitchens, all of the little bits.
I'm dreading that bit.
That is the bit I am, like, you know, adore and I love and I thrive in.
I'd leave him to it.
He'd be well able.
It would be all sparkles.
There isn't enough sparkles.
No, there's not.
It has to be accessible.
No, it has to be the best we can get for families. Quality over quantity. Durable, long-lasting, quality products that will be there forever, that won't break down, and that we will have a beautiful space, and that the thought will have gone in. We know it has to have a calming feel, a warm feel. So our colours need to be calming, soft, natural, warm. That's my thing, right? I adore interiors and I love that. And Dermot loves interiors and he loves design. I think we get on very well and we're going to get on magically when we get to that part.
Yeah, yeah.
As he looks at me there going, oh, mother of Jesus, wait till we get to the paint colour bit. But I look forward to that because we know together that the final product will be wonderful for families, and they're going to come in and go, holy God, I feel warm and loved. And then Dermot and I are going to go, job done.
Yeah.
It must mean an awful lot to you when people volunteer their time, or people like Chadwick's getting in behind and fully supporting you to help you see your vision.
It means the absolute world to me and to the CF community. There is a buzz out there. You've no idea in the hospitals, the doctors, the nurses. Every time I'm up there going, how's the house? Where are you? When will it be opening? Families, there's that. And for me, it's just, I feel just personally overwhelmed by the actual love and kindness by so many companies. There are so many wonderful, wonderful charities out there who need help, who need support. But they're helping us. We're a very small charity, Donica, but we've a big heart. And I really and truly, I'm so grateful to everybody and all our team. Like, I really am. And I really want to get to the end of the rainbow, as they say, and to see the magic happen and to see those doors open and to cut that ribbon and see that first family in the house. It will be very special for me. I just, you know, and it means more than I can say, Donica.
I can imagine. If someone's listening and would like to help, how can they?
Yes, they can get in touch directly with the foundation. Yeah. So they can email info@jbcff.com.
Okay.
That's info@jbcff.com.
If that's too long to remember, they can just Google Julian Benson Foundation.
They can just Google Julian Benson CF Foundation, jbcff.com.
They can send in an email. That there's loads of ways, little portals to get your information, your content. Exactly. And everybody is welcome.
And am I right to think it's not just, obviously finances always help. There is materials, of course, which Chadwicks have got behind.
If you've got cash.
Yeah, cash is king. Exactly.
It will not be turned away.
But you mentioned it earlier, just time. People giving up maybe some of that.
And if you can lend a weekend doing something. And it's funny, even like we've had architects, interior designers come to us and say, well, of course, yeah, anybody who can help out to do anything to do with building, please.
Yeah, please. Anyone, we still need people. Yeah. Anyone, just please reach out to us. They can get us at jbcff.com. Send us an email. Once you go there, there's a link to everything. And, you know, and absolutely, we do have running costs, Donica, when the house opens. So we absolutely would love cash donations. Super. Anyone out there who can help us in any way or supply us with supplies for the house.
Yeah.
Because we'll be providing food for people. You know, they won't have to think when they come to us. We're going to look after them. So everything, every little thing counts. So I always say, no matter how big or small your company may be, or you feel you can help us in any way, we're delighted to hear from you, and we'd be delighted to hear
That's
from
a,
you.
That's a great analogy of it. Just pick up a bit of the load. You know what I mean? It's lighter if there's more of us.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Being on a team. Yeah.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Dermot, we chat so much about it. There is a lack of skills in the industry at the moment in construction. Just your own take on that. How do you feel about it?
I really do believe in minding our construction industry, and it is an industry, and when it's all booming, it's great, but when it's not, we don't tend to look after people. We don't tend to kind of make sure that electricians have jobs, plumbers have jobs, carpenters have jobs. So when we can see that, the government do need to step in, and they say, okay, this is where we're going to do our spend on housing. This is when we're going to keep people in employment, because they're valuable people. We have spent as a nation a lot of money and effort and time training people up, mind them and hang on to them. The boom bust thing, we've just got to eliminate that in this country, because it's happening over and over again. As soon as things get really busy, you can't get a tradesperson, you can't get people, there's the skills shortages, you know. So we need to really encourage that and keep that going, because our population is going to explode. And so we are going to be building and building a lot over the next 30 years. And forward planning, it's really simple.
But just on that, at what level do we need to do that? Do we need to do it at school level, or as parents, do we need to get better at actually encouraging our kids? Maybe we have a mindset about a trade that is totally incorrect.
Absolutely. And a trade, if you're in the right trade, it's the most amazing job. You're working outdoors, you're working with your hands. For a lot of people, it is a dream job, because you're creating, you're making something. Like, I work on building sites all day, every day. And like, you've done up a drawing and you hand it over to a carpenter, right? And then they put their own little spin on it, and you go back and I'd say, oh my God, that is so cool. So you describe to me how you did it again. So you took that, the bottom step, and you, wow. And that looks, so they've become invested in the process, and the pride when they've done something and they've created something is just unbelievable. Like, most of the time when you're walking around a building site, at the end it's kind of, do you see, look, I did that over there. Isn't that really, I said that, you know, it's a really rewarding job. And I think there can be, I don't know, in Ireland, there can be a little bit of snobbery around a kind of, you know, in, maybe it's the nature of Ireland as a country. Like, we're a young country.
Yeah.
So for people, university,
we
university.
Pushed for education. We pushed,
it doesn't matter. Just get a university degree. I don't care what you get it in. Get it in.
Yeah.
That's not always the right solution for every kid. Do what you love doing and encourage people in. If they're good with their hands and if they've got good 3D spatial awareness, if they've got good problems, there's lots of skills you need in the construction site. You need, you know, problem solving skills. You're working with other people. You are a little company, say as a plumber who's working alongside another little company, electricians, plasterers, joiners. And you have to hold your own and you have to become part of a team. You have to mind your, what you're doing, but you also have to be cognizant of it. There's a lot of skills, a lot of people skills. There's a lot of skills that people need. And I think there's so many people who be really good at that, but they're probably saying, oh no, mum wanted me to go
push
to university.
On for this.
Yeah, to do something that I didn't really want to do when I actually would have. So encouraging people to find joy in construction and to get and to do trades, I think would be brilliant.
Yeah, and we're seeing that even in sport, visibility matters. So girls in the game has really improved and all our standards of sport have come on because it's visible. We're only picking maybe from 50% of our demographic in terms of gender. How do we get more
and
girls?
And construction is worse. Like, okay, we're starting to get, there's lots of women now in architecture and in the design field. I can't remember the last time I've seen somebody on a building site.
Yeah, we've been chatting to a few of them, but just, and some of the barriers.
And they are a few.
Yes, yeah.
And I suppose what people don't realise now that what's moved on in construction is, like, there's very few jobs in construction that require you to be very, very physical because there's machines now and health and safety has taken on. Women can do it and they can enjoy
it. Absolutely. It should be gender neutral.
Women would love being on building sites, working the camaraderie, the teamwork, all that. It can be great fun. Like, you go in, I've often would arrive in at 11 o'clock onto a building site and they're all sitting around having the crack, their cup of tea, whatever, enjoying each other's company. And then because they're not always together. Like, so if you're a plumber, you'll be on a different job tomorrow in a different house or a different home. It can be a very fun industry.
Yeah. Like, exactly how you found your lane. There's boys and girls out there that construction's for them, and maybe by pushing for third level
and
education.
It does need to start in school, and it does need to start with kind of some of the engineering and the woodwork and getting more girls in school into those subjects.
Julian, we leave the last word to you. You must be proud. You must be proud of what you're doing right now. We mentioned legacy. You mentioned your mom earlier on, but this is something, you know, in time, people will see your name and realise you left something behind for the next person to better them, to look after them, to care for them.
Yes, it's true. I am very proud. But I'm very proud of everyone who's helped me on this journey to create this vision. I'm proud for our community who are out there helping us deliver this project. I'm also proud that, I suppose, in many ways that I've got this far in my life, in my career, that I'm still going, I'm still thriving, and that I can still make a difference. If I can make a difference for the future, then that's everything. I think every one of us in life, a time comes when we say, what's it all about? Why am I here? What can I do? When I'm gone, what will it mean? And sometimes that only comes on someone's deathbed. But I think if we can do things and create something special on our journey in life, this is my chapter now. This is one of the chapters in my long book of never-ending stories. And hopefully it will have a really, really happy ending. And I'm so proud and thankful. And I just also want to say today, thank you to you, Donica, for being so wonderful, so welcoming and so kind and really nice way of interviewing. And as I said, this is my first podcast.
You're well
and
able.
With you. And I just want to say thank you to you and no better man to be with me here today, Dermot. And, you know, as I said at the start, it's the three musketeers and teamwork makes the dream work.
It absolutely does.
So thank you to you.
No,
thank you to Dermot.
Welcome.
And thank you to Chadwick.
Again, you might remind us if people would like to help out, where would they go?
Yeah, they can go to jbcff.com. or info@jbcff. You can just Google us, Julian Benson.
If you can't remember
all
those letters, just Google Julian Benson Cystic Fibrosis.
Julian Benson Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. Google me. I'm out there. I'm live. I'm large and in charge. Come, people. Come join the mission. Join the journey.
Don't
Let's
put
go.
Them off. Don't put them off.
I'm putting nobody off.
Not at all.
Don't dream it, be it, Dermot. Yeah. We're here today doing the do.
Absolutely. Lads, thank you so much for joining us on Under Construction. We had a brilliant fitness advisor, Paul Derbyshire was his name, and he's always pushed us on to train really hard, but he had a great line, and I think it's fitting for both of you. The work you do for the man beside you makes you a better man. And I think, to be fair to the two of you, for having that selfless element to look out for everyone else, fair play to you, lads.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, continued success.
Thanks, Donica.
Welcome back to Under Construction. Delighted to join us today in Suppliers Corner is Kevin Lunny. Kevin, how are you?
Good to see you, Donica. How are you?
We're great. Look, I'm a bit of a bluffer, and that's why Patrick's here. Mm-hmm. He knows your business inside out, but you might just give us a brief history just to get me up to speed, if you don't mind, Kevin.
Yeah, Mannock is a business based between Cavan and Fermanagh, so it's largely split across the border. Thankfully, we employ about 800 people directly and probably about 250 people in contract basis after that. So we're a very large employer in that area part of the country. We have significant presence in the cement market specifically, and then the downstream products in relation to concrete products, roofing, flooring, etc. So we've been working on lots of new things over the last number of years. And then separately within the business, we have a food packaging business, which is very separate, but equally an important employer in that part of the world.
So some challenges across the industry, Kevin, you know, things like sustainability are key to everyone's future. It's on everyone's agenda. What's your sustainability agenda like?
Yeah, well, absolutely, Patrick. I mean, there's been lots of challenges over the last number of years between Brexit, and then we had COVID, and then we had all the other, you know, the various challenges generally with the war and the crisis in the Middle East and energy crisis, etc. So lots of things to be concentrating our minds on. But more importantly, and I suppose underlying all of that, is the whole sustainability piece. And particularly for a cement company, one of the largest emitters of carbon dioxide in the country, it's a huge challenge for us.
Sure. And I mean, obviously on the insulation side, you know, you're contributing hugely to building sustainable homes with that high level of insulation and that quality product that you have. Are you seeing a huge increase in the demand for insulation?
We've seen a significant increase in demand for solutions. And rather than just being a supplier of commodities, insulation products or EPS or expanded polystyrene or any of the, or even cement, I mean, what customers, merchants and contractors and suppliers are really looking for is what is the solutions here? And I suppose we've been working hard within our technical team to try to drive that and try to respond to that need, because you know, there's very many ways in which this whole agenda can be attacked, and I think it's going to take everybody working together to do that. And I know we have a number of products that we're working closely on together, us as the supplier of the core products and Chadwicks as the supplier into the channel. Rapid Build Solutions that you have out there is something that we've a big interest in. And some of the products that we have, you know, we're interested to talk about those and to explain sort of the benefits of those.
Sure. So we're at a stage now. I think we probably built about 32,000 houses in 23, hoping to get to 35 next year. Brilliant. We're still falling way behind. We're seeing a shortage of trades, shortage of skilled workers on site. You know, in the length of time to build, although it's shortening with some of the offsite solutions that we have, is this the future now?
I think this Rapid Build solution that's there, which includes Aircrete product, EPS insulation and render, can create, has a space in that market. And I think, depending on the particular application, has a correct price point for whatever is needed for the customer as well. So I think there needs to be a holistic inclusion of all the different applications. Yeah. And nobody is, you know, gets too precious about what is applicable. It's certainly one of them.
Yeah, I think it's about getting that balance right, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, you seem to be solution focused in all your thinking, and just even looking forward, what are the kind of areas for you to help solve problems with?
Well, I think we owe it to our community and to our area in which we're from, to think about this. But that won't, we won't have a business unless we have a sustainable product and a comfort and a situation with customers to take these products on. So we have to prove that those are solutions. So the sustainability journey in relation to house building is one aspect of it. I suppose more particular to us, I guess, is the whole sustainability journey in relation to the product, the core product that we produce, which is cement. Since Roman times, nobody has found a solution or an alternative product to cement for construction. So therefore, we have to look at alternative fuels to produce it. We have to look at alternative materials to which maybe produce less carbon. And we have to look at bringing into play all of the technologies, AI, efficiency measurement and controls systems. We have to bring into play all of those things so that we can actually make a real difference to this product, because we still have to get to net zero by 2050. And that's a challenge for the cement sector. I think everybody out there understands and acknowledges that. But the real challenge for cement sector is the fact that 60% of the emissions that comes from cement has nothing got to do with the fuel. It's simply when you calcine or when you process limestone, which is the core product, it releases a chemical reaction. It releases CO2. And that's the CO2 that even if you have a completely green cement plant, you're still going to have 60% of the emissions you have today. That's the real challenge. So then that drives the research towards things like carbon capture, sequestration. Those are expensive things. Those are not technologies that are not all out there. So we will see our way probably to getting rid of all our coal by 2030. And I think that will be in line with pretty much most of the forward-thinking cement plants in the world. But we're still left with this challenge. And carbon capture, carbon sequestration, carbon storage, those are difficult things. We have research ongoing with all of the major institutions and academic research centres, you know, certainly over Europe and some in the US. And they're all focused on this.
And yeah, I suppose if we look at other components going into buildings, we're moving towards lightweight construction, which should lead to you know, less in terms of foundation,
therefore
less concrete going in. And that in itself is, you know, moving that industry to have less need for it, I suppose, in its current form.
Well, it's all about that. I mean, that particular is one of our products, the Aircrete product. It's the only manufacturer of this product on the island. And we produce about 16 million blocks of those per annum. So they're part of the solution that we have with Chadwicks. But really, that's a product that's lightweight. It's about 7 to 8 times more thermally efficient than a concrete block. So when you build a house with that, you don't need to have as much insulation. It's about efficiency there. And from that perspective, it has the same load bearing capability of a dense block. So it's a much better use of materials. And in that, there's also an element of recycled materials as well. So that means that the carbon footprint overall is much lower. From an overall build perspective, it's a much better solution, particularly when you see the advantages that will give you over the lifetime of the build, it'd be that 70, 100 years.
So it's doing more than one job. Right?
Absolutely, doing more than one job and facilitating the creation of other solutions in that space, like what Chadwicks is doing in conjunction with ourselves.
And do you see that having to be specified now by architects and engineers, or is it becoming mainstream?
Well, this product is very much the mainstream product in Europe. They've been building with Aircrete products like this one for 50, 60 years all across Europe. It's the product of choice. Similarly, in the UK, it's very well established. For reasons that's a little bit hard to understand, the Irish market didn't take it up as quickly. And when we opened this plant about 20 years ago, we would have expected that, you know, it would be the new, you know, as the only product, only producer in the country, that we would have a strong market on that. But builders really didn't take it on. The building builders in the country are quite traditional in a way. They like the dense block. But moving to a sustainable home, we need solutions like this, because otherwise we have thermal bridging issues. We have significant elements around the insulation and trying to move the stock up the BER ratings. Trying to get to passive house, you won't get to passive house with concrete blocks. You certainly won't get to anything close to where we need to be without this type of innovation. So heretofore, a lot of our production in this plant in Northern Ireland has been going to the UK, where it's the standard product. So really what we're doing here is trying to educate the sector that this is really something that should be looked at a lot more closely.
Even the thermal bridging, eliminating that in a product like that, that's massive.
it's very significant, and people don't really necessarily understand all of what is thermal bridging. It's really just a situation where you don't have a complete envelope around the junctions in roofs, in floors, at windows, at doors. You don't have a fully insulated junction, which means you get cold spots if you have a concrete block all the way around. So this product, because it's an insulation product, it has the capacity to hold the roof, it has the capacity to hold the structure of the wall, but it has the insulation as well. So it basically eliminates thermal bridging. And thermal bridging is a problem, not just in relation to the loss of energy, but thermal bridging has a huge potential issue in relation to the mold growth, et cetera, where you have differences in temperature. So you might have a very well insulated wall with lots of insulation, but if you don't have a proper thermal bridge, you will get a cold spot at the floor or a cold spot at the roof, and suddenly you get mold growth. And that becomes a challenge later on in the use of the house.
It becomes almost inherent that it's there then to stay unless you can actually...
You can't eliminate it. Very hard to eliminate it.
Retrospectively eliminate it, yeah. Very good. Kevin, look, thanks so much for coming in today and sharing with us all the innovations you have and what a strong business you have north and south and across into the UK. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Patrick.
Really great having you here.
Thank you. Great.